You know that I would be a liar. Okay, so good morning, everybody. This is the Naturalist Show with
Carol Butler
and Bernie Wides, the Naturalists, and we're back on the air. We haven't been on for a couple of weeks, and we have a fascinating show today, and there'll be another part to this show on the next time they broadcast it. So, Carol, why don't you introduce the show today and
okay.
What we're going to talk about.
Well, as you got a clue from the music that Joe chose, which was Light My Fire. We're talking about light today, and we were inspired by the new bioluminescence show at the American Museum of Natural History, where Bernie and I both volunteer. Bernie is a trained docent now in bioluminescence, so he's full of all sorts of information about the phenomenon and about the exhibit, which we will talk about. But I want to just sort of introduce it first by talking a little bit about light in general.
You remember the old image in the cartoon when somebody got an idea and the light bulb went on?
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's me.
Okay.
light bulb Bernie.
Very good.
Okay.
So light basically comes from an excited electron, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, some kind of energy causes an electron to move. And when it settles down, it releases a tiny packet of light.
I think it vibrates.
Well, it's excited.
Yeah. So it gets all excited and, you know, shakes a lot.
So, and when we were in high school, I remember this very vividly. I remember learning about light, and the teacher said, there's two ways to understand light, either as a wave or as bursts, photons. And I said, I don't understand how it can be both. And I think the teacher didn't understand either, because to this day, I remember leaving that class feeling confused. So now we understand it better. And what really explains it is quantum theory.
Right.
Which sounds very scary, but it's actually very simple. And it simply says that light consists of very small bundles of energy particles. Those are the photons. And the wavelength of the light determines the energy and the type of radiation that it produces. And the number of photons tells you how much radiation there is. So if there are a lot of photons, there's a brighter, more intense light. Fewer photons gives a dim light. And when you use the dimmer switch on the wall, and I'm very pleased with myself, I installed two dimmer switches this weekend. First time I ever did that. You're decreasing the number of photons sent from the bulb when you turn a dimmer. It's that simple.
And what's exciting the photons?
I didn't get to that yet. Go ahead.
It's the electricity.
Right.
That's exciting the electrons.
Right.
Which become photons.
Right.
And give off the energy as light.
Right.
Because they have this excess energy. It's like you go to the gym and you have all this energy and mm-hmm. you work it off. Well,
right.
They work it off by changing the level of the energy to light. And when we talk about radiation, people think it's about, you know, nuclear radiation, but this isn't.
Right.
This is the electromagnetic spectrum.
Right.
Which all light comes from.
All light is electromagnetic waves.
Right.
But the spectrum includes radio waves, gamma rays, and cosmic rays, right, which those are at the other end of the spectrum and have very small wavelengths. Visible light is at the middle of the spectrum.
All right, and that's the only thing we can see.
Right.
Is visible light.
Well, that's important. I wanted to say that too.
Talk about that,
when
Carol.
We talk about light, we really are talking about visible light that humans can see. Other animals see different types of light. Dogs see shades of gray, and we know from working with butterflies and writing a book about butterflies that butterflies see ultraviolet light, as do insects, not only butterflies. And so in my butterfly book, we have wonderful photographs by an Australian photographer of what looks like a landing strip in mm-hmm. the flower, which you don't see, we don't see, but the butterfly sees it or a bee sees it, and it directs them to where the nectar is on the flower. It's an ultraviolet guide. So, and the flowers look different colors to the insects
and the
Lepidoptera.
So that's a good point to stress, that there's this whole range of light wavelengths, and we can only see a very small part of it.
That's right.
Because if you look at a schematic of the electromagnetic spectrum, It's a huge variety of wavelengths, but we can only see visible light.
That's right.
Like the light coming from the sun or the light from artificial illumination that we make.
Right.
You know, bulbs and
stuff
like that.
The part we see is interesting is in the middle of the spectrum, because the radio waves are very long.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kind, gamma rays and cosmic rays, are very short. And the visible light that is available to us is in the middle. So that's important to remember.
And the visible light that we see is made up of many colors, many
right.
wavelengths.
Mm-hmm.
That's the group that we see.
Right.
Okay, so we had to make that very clear, because when we talk about bioluminescence in critters, some of this bioluminescent light we can't see.
Right. I just want to say one more thing, and then we'll talk about bioluminescence,
sure.
about the speed of light. As far as we know, all types of light move at one speed when they're in a vacuum, and that speed is about 300 million meters per second.
300,000 meters per second.
300 million.
Million?
Yep.
Okay. Or in the system we use, 186,000 miles per second.
Right. But according to my data, which I have here, it's 299,792,458 meters. So that's million.
Okay.
That speed is really fast, but it takes about 7 minutes for light to get from the sun to reach Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What I was interested in is you can slow light down in other substances, right? Like
yes.
the atmosphere or
right.
water or a diamond, for example. I like diamonds. Light moves at about 124 million meters per second, so less than half the speed in a vacuum in a diamond. That's a takeaway for no good reason except that I
okay.
like diamonds.
Yes, and when light comes through the galaxy even, you know, we won't get into it. It gets very complicated. The light can be bent by gravitational waves
right.
in our solar system, but that gets into a whole other complicated subject that we won't talk about today, of astronomy and light, because, you know, the goal of all astronomy is to collect as much light as you can. The bigger the telescope, the more light you can
yes.
collect, the further back in space you can see.
Right.
But let's get to critters, because that's what we're going to talk about today.
Right. Okay. So Bernie will talk about bioluminescence. We have learned a lot about bioluminescence. And then if we have time, we'll talk a little bit about, well, you probably will talk about fluorescence and how it's different from bioluminescence. And I'm interested in black light. We can talk about that. And phosphorescence, which is a little confusing, but it's related to
right.
black light, to phosphorus.
Phosphorescence and fluorescence
mm-hmm.
and bioluminescence.
Right.
So here's all these essences that
right.
we're going to talk about. So you get ready.
Okay.
But we won't cover it all today. There's just too much. We're going to have another program on this.
Oh, and there's iridescence,
and
too.
Iridescence.
I brought the hummingbird book because we have such... There's a very interesting section on how iridescence works in the wing of a hummingbird, in
yes.
the feather.
That's strictly a physical structure thing
right.
in
yes,
the wing.
Yes, that's right.
Right. That's all those beautiful iridescent butterflies.
Correct.
Okay. So we have plenty to talk about. So let's start off with fireflies. How about that? Because
okay.
most people are familiar with fireflies.
I remember catching them in jars
sure.
when I was a kid.
We all did. We all captured them and hopefully let them go so they wouldn't die in the jar. But they were fascinating to see. And, you know, it was a mystery of how they glowed and why they glowed and all that stuff. And the mystery is it's still a mystery to many cultures, because there are festivals around the earth having to do with fireflies. And where are fireflies? Well, most of them are in the tropics. I think there are 2,000 different species of fireflies, most of them in the tropics, but we do have a population in the Americas that we'll talk about. And, for example, okay, there are firefly celebrations in the season when the fireflies do their flashing, which is the springtime. And we'll talk about that in a second. Okay, so around Tokyo in Japan, there's a festival, and it's traditionally fireflies symbolize silent yet passionate love to Japanese poetry.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like that?
I like it.
Silent but passionate love, which is a perfect description. And today, it has become a symbol of environmental conservation in Japan. because the Japanese have the same trouble we have here, losing the environment and losing the fireflies.
Right,
okay?
Right.
So I talk to young people today, and they say, yeah, they still see fireflies, but not a huge amount.
It's true. You don't see them like we used to see them.
We used to see thousands of them.
Yeah, it's
and all
true.
That. But because there were vacant lots.
Right.
If you lived in the city, and where I lived near the ocean, there was, you know, edges and salt marshes and things. And the fireflies would be in any open area. So they're really disappearing.
I wonder what they feed on.
Well, they're beetles. So whatever beetles feed on, they feed on it. Other bugs and plants.
Yeah.
Okay? So even though they're called fireflies, they're not really flies. They're beetles because they have four sets of wings, and only two of the wings are for flight. The other two wings are a covering to protect the wings, you know, when they're sitting. When you see a ladybug, it's a beetle.
Yep.
Okay? So just to make that clear.
And okay. Glowworms are the larvae, right? They're the larvae of different species of flies and beetles.
Yes, but and we're going to talk about a specific glowworm that is in a cave in New Zealand.
Right.
But fireflies glow their whole lifetime.
Right.
From larva to pupa and adults. Okay. Just one other interesting place that I would tell you to go to see these fireflies is in the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Two summers ago, I was in Smoky Mountain National Park and had a walk with a ranger, and she spoke about synchronous flashing of fireflies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So what the fireflies have evolved to do in that park is to all flash at the same time. Because when we were kids, they didn't do that.
Right.
One would flash here, one would flash there,
right.
and there, and all that stuff. But in the Smoky Mountains, they have evolved to flash at the same time. Now, why would they want to do that? What's the purpose of flashing?
Well,
one
purpose is to identify themselves as a potential mate, as being of the same species. So the patterns are signals to the opposite sex.
Right. So that's the main purpose of flashing. And how did it evolve? We don't really know. But we know that it has evolved about 50 times, 50 different times in different critters. So therefore, it's a useful adaptation. Otherwise, nature wouldn't have evolved it. If it had no use or it was detrimental, it would have just died out. Okay?
Right.
But
go
ahead, Carol.
Well, I mean, that's a very important function of the light. But I just want to say sort of more generally, because I think that's important. It's interesting to talk about what the functions of this bioluminescence are. Most of the world's bioluminescence exists in the ocean.
Right, 80%
right.
at least.
Okay. That's all, just to put it in perspective.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk about fireflies first, as I said, because we all have a familiarity with it. The other creatures, most of them you've never seen because they're in the deep oceans and all that. So It's a fascinating thing. So when you go to the museum, which I recommend highly, to visit this exhibit called Creatures of Light, okay, it's an extra exhibit. You have to pay more for it.
This is our museum.
Our museum of American Museum of Natural History. So a little tip: when you go to our museum, and if you're really on a low budget, when you go to pay the admission, it's really pay what you want. But if you want to go see the special exhibits, you have to pay the regular price of that exhibit. So, for example, if you want to pay the museum $5 and then you say you want to see Creatures of Light, they're going to charge you the regular price to see that exhibit.
Right.
Okay? But this would keep your costs down.
And if you know somebody who works in the museum, we get passes. We get a limited number, but we're encouraged to share them with friends. So if you know somebody who works or volunteers, hit them up for some passes.
Okay, so we said fireflies do their flashing. The main reason they do it is to attract a mate. So here's what the story is, Carol. So you have to pay attention because, you know, you never know when you're going to have to be a flasher.
Okay.
Okay? So the females don't fly. The females hang around in the grasses. So in grasslands are the best place to see fireflies. Well, when we were kids on these vacant lots with weeds growing all over the place, that's where the fireflies were.
Right. Well, the female fireflies don't have wings.
Well, I guess that's why they don't fly. They all don't have wings?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the wings aren't really important in this. They are hanging out. Oh, they do have wings, I think.
Says they're wingless.
Where is that, from Wikipedia?
No, I don't go to Wikipedia.
Okay. Okay. So the females are hanging out in the grasses. And it's mating time, it's the springtime, and they flash their light. Okay, now they flash the light in a special pattern. Every species of firefly has a distinct pattern for flashing their light. And if there are 2,000 species of fireflies, there are 2,000 different patterns. But the ones that we know best are the North American fireflies, who flash in a specific pattern. And the males are flying, looking for the females. Mm-hmm. So they are flying low over the grassland. And the difference in the males and females physiologically is they have bigger eyes, so they can see the light easier. Mm-hmm. And their flashing organ, which is called the lantern, is very bright, mm-hmm. because the females have to be able to see it. So how do they communicate to each other? Well, if you want to communicate and find a partner, you can go on an email to one of these dating services. You send an email and you're communicating. Or mm-hmm. the old days, you called somebody up on the telephone and say, hi, I want to meet you, blah, blah, blah. Or you go to a singles event. Well, the singles event for the fireflies is the grasslands. Right. So here are these males cruising, looking for a female.
Right.
Okay? So the female starts flashing a specific pattern. Now, if the male that's flying over is the same species, he will flash back to the female the same pattern, okay, saying, hello, I'm a female, here I am, and he'll say, here I am, a male, and I'd like to meet you. So they'll do this flashing, and the male will see the female's flash, he'll come down to her, and they'll copulate and start the next generation of fireflies, okay? So the other side of this, it's a little dangerous to flash if you're a little beetle, because predators can find you
right.
when you flash easily. But we'll talk about that danger in a minute. First, I want to talk about the danger of sex, because there's always risks involved mm-hmm. in sexual behavior. So the male will find the female of the same species, and he will copulate, and that's the end of that happy story. Now, if the female is very hungry, okay, and she's waiting for a male to show up, if a male of another species flies over her and flashes the signal, the female can mimic that signal and attract the male from another species that she's not going to copulate with. So why is she attracting him? Because the male comes down and she eats him for lunch.
All right.
So that's what I say. Sex is a little dangerous.
Well, it's another example of female choice, which is
right.
a very big element in reproduction in animals.
That it's always the female choice. Almost always,
not always, but almost
unless it's
always.
Forced.
Right. In some species, there's forced mating, and then it's not female choice.
Yeah. So that's why I say that flashing could be dangerous. And the other thing that the flashing does, it says to other critters, "Don't eat me. I don't taste good."
Right.
Like in butterflies, it's similar with bright colors. Right.
Right,
in other insects?
Yeah, indicates that they're toxic usually.
Yeah. So it doesn't work with all critters, because if it worked with all critters, there would be no more fireflies. They would, they would never be eaten, but they are eaten mm-hmm. by critters. And if you come to the exhibit at the museum, we have a diorama that shows a toad, and his stomach is glowing because he's eaten so many fireflies that the stomach is glowing right through the skin to show that it doesn't always work to keep critters away. But it works a lot with birds.
Right.
Birds will eat a firefly or two, and they'll get a little sick. They'll never eat them again. Okay, they'll learn that behavior. So the beginning of our exhibit actually starts with something else rather than fireflies. When you enter the exhibit, there's a beautiful exhibit on bioluminescent fungi, or fungi, however you say it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically mushrooms.
Right.
Okay? So these mushrooms are northeastern mushrooms. If you go in the woods at night, in the Catskill Mountains or any place upstate, and you're lucky and it has rained, you will see a glow, wood glowing, this blue-green color. It's very scary. I remember when I was in Boy Scouts, we used to hike a lot,
mm-hmm.
and at night, you'd see the stuff glowing in the woods. You'd be scared as hell. You didn't know what it was.
Right.
But it was my personal experiences with this honey mushroom that the mushroom itself doesn't glow, but it sends out like roots into rotting wood called mycelia,
mm-hmm.
and they are to break the wood down, so that's how the mushroom gets its nutrients.
Right.
The roots are glowing.
Huh.
So it's very mysterious looking. Okay. The other two mushrooms in the Northeast, one is the... there's one that looks like the oyster mushroom that we eat, but it isn't. And then the third one, I can't remember the name, but you'll see it at the exhibit. The beginning of the exhibit is beautiful. And then from there you go to the fireflies.
But do you know why the mushrooms glow?
That's a big mystery. Why right. do mushrooms glow?
One theory is that it attracts insects,
right.
and the insects carry the spores so that the mushrooms can reproduce.
Right. That's probably the only thing that science has figured out so far.
Right.
That seed dispersal. In the case of mushrooms, they don't have seeds, they have spores.
Spores, yeah.
So if you rub up against the mushroom cap, the spores fall on you, and they'll be transported by a critter
right.
that will eat them. And
right, and it's like nectar or things that attract insects
to flowers,
sure. so that they'll fertilize to carry the seed,
right?
The pollen, right?
Yeah. So the firefly exhibit is interesting because these little critters, which are very tiny, maybe they're a quarter of an inch to half inch long, have developed a communication system between them. Besides this. The thing of the mating thing, right? Which they're communicating with light, with flashes of light to each other. So this is an interesting evolutionary thing because when the fireflies first started to flash, to glow with luminescence, they didn't flash. They just had a steady low glow,
right.
which probably was for the same thing. Mm. But then they evolved the system of communications. And in our exhibit, you can try it out. I'll just describe this very quickly.
Yes, it's very interesting.
It's a terrific little exhibit. So what we have set up are like satellite dishes on the wall, which are screens, and you can stand in front of two strobe lights. And on the strobe light control, there's one button that's flashing continuously with the pattern of a specific firefly.
Right.
And what you can do is you can press a button and get that strobe light to mimic the pattern that's up on the screen. If you can do that, then the female will talk to you and say, "I'm receptive, come," because she'll flash back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for a mate in the firefly family,
right.
you can learn how to do it in that exhibit. Okay? The other thing that's interesting is, how do they do it? So you want to talk about that, Carol, the chemical reaction that they do?
Bioluminescence in general, you mean?
Yeah
sure. Bioluminescence is really the combination of two types of substances in a light-producing reaction. That's the definition. One is a luciferin, which is a light-producing substance, and the other is a luciferase, which is an enzyme that catalyzes the reaction. And the luciferin can be a protein, different things, but the light-making process requires a charged ion to activate that reaction. And all kinds of triggers can start the reaction that creates light. They can be neurological, they can be mechanical, they can be chemical, or they can be things that we don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay? And then often the process requires the presence of other substances like oxygen or adenosine triphosphate, which is also ATP, which is a molecule that stores and transports energy in most living organisms, including the human body.
Right, it comes from the mitochondria in the cell.
Right, so that luciferin-luciferase reaction can also create byproducts like oxyluciferin and water, interestingly.
Okay, that's good, right.
Right, so we have to, the only thing to remember is those terms, luciferin and luciferase, are generic terms rather than the names of particular chemicals. Lots of different substances can act like luciferins and luciferases depending on the species of the bioluminescent life form. And that, not to make a mistake, that those things describe a particular substance.
Okay, but they all need oxygen for the reaction because it's an oxidation production of light.
Mm-hmm.
And what is oxidation? It's burning, basically, to produce light. But this light is very efficient. It's cold light.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you have incandescent bulbs at home, the old-fashioned bulbs. Most of the energy is used to heat up the filament, so the filament will glow and give off light.
Mm.
So that's why they're not so efficient. That's why the new bulbs that we have to buy now, energy-efficient bulbs,
right.
they work like fluorescents.
Right.
Right? Where they have a gas in them that will luminesce, practically.
Right.
And
without generating a lot of
heat. And the bulb is coated on the inside with a chemical that will glow because of the gas inside.
Right.
So it's very similar to the bioluminescence in critters. We've learned how to imitate them.
Right.
Okay, so anything else you want to add about fireflies, Carol? It's a fascinating thing.
Nope.
But we'll move along in the exhibit now. So first you see the mushrooms. And then when you move into the next part of the exhibit, there's the firefly exhibit, which is a big chunk of the exhibit because the museum has made these beautiful models of fireflies, and they're hanging all over the place. And, oh, yeah, one other thing is I mentioned about the synchronous flashing in the Rocky Mountains.
Right.
Well, in Asia, there's a species of firefly that will, in the springtime, they hang out in the mangrove trees, which are mangroves grow at the edge of waterways, coastal edges and waterways. And what happened over many years is that they're so reliable, those fireflies, they come back to that same mangrove tree every year to do their spring mating ritual, that they do synchronous flashing also. And the boaters on that river, they use it as a lighthouse.
Oh.
They say, when you come to the tree that's flashing, you make a left turn.
Wow.
Left turn.
Great.
So it's an interesting little sidelight.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move now to another creature, Carol. Is it one that you want to cover, or should I go along?
Well, there are a lot of creatures in the ocean. Most of them are in salt water rather than in fresh water, and the reason is probably because fresh water inland bodies of water haven't existed as long as the oceans, so the animals that live there haven't had as much time to adapt to their surroundings. And also the bottoms of most bodies of fresh water aren't as dark as the bottoms of the ocean.
Yeah, right. And 80% of the bioluminescence on our Earth, and since our Earth is 70-80% water, have evolved in the water.
Right, but mostly the ocean. That's all, I would say about it.
There's only one bioluminescent freshwater creature that we found that's like a limpet, which is like a snail.
Right.
And attaches to rocks. Mm-hmm. And they found that in the bioluminescent cave in New Zealand. And let's just backtrack a quick second to this cave before we get our feet wet in the water.
We can backtrack. Okay?
So firefly exhibit, the next exhibit is on a creature that lives in a cave in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not uncommon, but it's not common. There are these caves in different parts of the Earth. But the best one is in New Zealand, on the North Island. It's called the Waitemo Cave, which is a native, Aborigine word. And I don't know what it means, but it's called the Waitemo. Maybe that's where it is. So what you do is, I personally had the experience of going there, and it was terrific. What you do is you come to this spot, and there are guys with boats.
Mm-hmm.
You pole through this. No motors are allowed.
Right.
And what it makes you feel is the old legend of the River Styx and going to the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
I remember you talking about this. It's very interesting, yeah.
Yeah. The River Styx, which was death coming for you, or to go to the underworld, and you got pulled across the river by this figure, you know, with the hood on, and that you see in all cartoons now with the big sickle.
Right.
Scythe. The Reaper, the Grim Reaper. Okay. So you go and you get in this little boat, and they pull you into this cave. And when you get into this cave and you look up at the ceiling is glowing. It looks like stars. And what's doing this? It's a little larva of a fly called the fungus fly. It's a tiny little fly.
In the ceiling of the cave.
In the ceiling of the cave. So how does this happen? It happens like this. This little fly mates on the outside of the cave, and then they look for a place to lay their eggs. They fly into the cave and deposit their eggs along the sides of the cave. Okay, when the eggs hatch out into larva, the larva creep up to the ceiling of the cave, and they glow. They do bioluminescence. But what else they do is they send down little fishing lines hanging down from the ceiling like spider webs.
Wow! Yeah.
And these little fishing lines have a sticky substance on it, okay? So they're trying to catch something with this, all right? Most insects are attracted to light.
Right.
So keep that in mind. So here's what happens. Since this cave has flowing water in it, and it's constantly bringing insects into the cave, because a lot of insects spend part of their lifetime in the water.
Right.
They have a water phase, like mosquitoes, for example. Mosquitoes lay their eggs on water, and the The larvae live in water, and then when they're adults, they emerge and they fly up. So there are a lot of insects that do that. So here you are, you have eggs being brought in to the cave, but at the same time, the eggs are developing and changing. The larvae emerge, and when the larvae emerge, or when they emerge as adults and they can fly, these other insects see the light up at the ceiling of the cave, and they fly up towards the light, and they get caught
in this tricky
string.
These
fishing lines.
Right.
And then the larvae of the glowworm will reel it in and
right,
eat them.
Right, right.
So here's an interesting...
So it's another function of the light, which is to attract prey, which
right.
we'll see more in other in fish as well.
Okay, and in the museum, we've made a beautiful exhibit of a cave where you can stick your head in
right.
the cave, and little kids can go underneath.
You have to climb underneath.
Underneath.
Yeah.
And we almost lost a kid in there once, so they had to change it around. And the pre-opening day, when the press was invited, one of the press guys brought his young kid, and the kid climbed up into the cave and more. And walked through it. They couldn't find him for a few minutes, so they had to put up a plastic shield now, so your kids can't climb into the cave. Well, we would have got some publicity.
That's right.
The kid got lost in the cave, but you can't do that anymore. So don't worry. You bring your children. It's a great exhibit. They'll love it. Okay. Then the next thing is a small exhibit on a millipede that only lives in California.
Right.
Okay. In the redwood forest in California.
Okay.
The millipede glows. And we think it's also to scare off predators and to find a mate.
To signal that it's toxic.
That it is, right. They did an experiment with birds, and they found that the birds won't eat them because they're toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that signals the bird. Okay, then we move from land. We're still on land now. Then we move into water.
Right.
So the next part of the exhibit is about Mosquito Bay in Puerto Rico.
Maybe we should take a break at this point,
okay,
and then the
idea.
Second half will be in the water.
Okay, we should do that because this gets very exciting. You have
right.
to walk in the water.
Don't give it away.
And we talk.
Okay.
So, Joe, we'll take a little break now.
Well, you wake up in the morning. You hear the work bell ring. And I march you to the table. You see the same old thing. Ain't no food upon the table. There's no fork up in the pan. But you better not complain, boy. You get in trouble with the man. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a ever-loving light on me. Yonder come Miss Rosie.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information, and be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
Shine its ever-loving light on me.
Okay, here we are back on the air for part two, I guess, of the show, Carol.
In the water.
In the water. Bioluminescence in the water. We said 80% of the critters that do it live in the water. So, Carol, you want to talk about one of the critters in the water?
Well, there are lots of them.
Okay,
I think what I'm interested in is the functions that it serves in the water.
Okay.
It startles the prey.
Right, right.
It misdirects the prey, gives sort of a smoke screen.
Mm-hmm.
It distracts pray by lighting up a body part that is unimportant. Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful exhibition. There's a wonderful exhibit in the show with the fish that has the light.
The lure.
It has everybody has seen it. I don't know what type of fish it is.
It's an anglerfish.
An anglerfish, of course, where it has a, I'm drawing it in the air. It has a, like a tendril that comes up with a bioluminescent lure on the tip of it,
right,
which attracts prey, but which also is confusing because it looks like that's the important part of the anglerfish, which, of course, if that's bitten off, it doesn't really hurt the fish.
No, it can probably grow another one.
That's probably true.
Yeah. So Carol mentioned this anglerfish. So we're talking about a critter that lives like 1,500 to 2,000 feet below the surface. Hmm. So it's perpetual darkness. So it's hard to find a mate. And it's hard to attract your food if you're in perpetual darkness. First of all, there's no light coming down there at all.
Okay? Right.
A little word about light in the water. You know, if you get sunlight shining on the water, it can only penetrate, you know, depending on the water, maybe 100 feet. And then you start losing the wavelengths of light. And the last wavelength to be lost is the blue end of the spectrum.
Right.
Because that penetrates the water the deepest. That's why the oceans look blue. Well, when you go snorkeling, it looks blue because that's the only really light that's penetrating it. The other light gets dissipated rather quickly, maybe in 100 feet, depending on what's in the water, you know, and how much algae and other stuff.
Right, and that area of the water where the bioluminescent animals live is called a dysphotic or poorly lit zone. That's what it means. Deeper than the sunlight, which is the euphotic zone,
where the sunlight
penetrates.
Right.
But yet shallower than the midnight zone, which is all the way down, which is called aphotic. It's just interesting.
Yeah, aphotic.
Aphotic, okay.
Yeah, well, when I went to school, we used different terms, but, you know, things have changed. But, okay, so you want to talk about that anglerfish, or should I?
No, go ahead, because I photographed that in the exhibit.
Yes.
But it was really hard to photograph because it's so dark in there. I couldn't get a good shot. I would have posted it on the page.
Yeah, I have
a
picture of it, and I posted it.
Oh, great.
On the show. By the way, you have to look at the pictures because most of the critters that we talk about, I got pictures of. It was very difficult because it's a dark exhibit, but I got it. So this anglerfish is fascinating. First of all, it lives in the deep, perpetual darkness, as Carol said, below the photic zone. And that means the zone that light can't penetrate. So what does it do? How does it make a living? Well, first of all, it has to find a mate, okay? So to find a mate, it will send out pheromone, or it's light. It's
right,
lit up.
Right.
Okay. As Carol said, it has a lure on the top, and hanging from its body below, it looks like seaweed. So it produces this light two ways. One way it produces the light in the lure, which is like a bubble, right? Mm-hmm. It looks like a bubble attached to a stalk to the top of his head. He has bioluminescent bacteria living in his body with him. Okay, so here are these simple little plants, bacteria. They're able to produce light. So what he does is he takes in every day, takes in a fresh supply of bacteria into this globe, okay? And when you get enough bacteria in there, they'll start to glow. They won't start to glow if there isn't a big population.
But it's like an orgy.
Yes, it's like an orgy, but it's called a quorum.
Okay.
You know, like when you have a meeting?
Yes.
You need a quorum to conduct business?
Yes.
That's what it's called, a quorum. Okay. So these bacteria are communicating with each other somehow, saying, hey, we can't glow yet. We don't have enough in here. But when it gets packed with millions, then they start to glow.
Interesting.
Okay? So that's one way. Then it has, hanging below its body, this other light that's shining that looks like seaweed. And that it produces with the luciferase thing. So this fish can do both.
Right.
Okay, like many of the critters. Now, when you see the picture of this fish, it's ugly looking. Okay. It has huge spike-like teeth.
Right.
And it's not a big fish. It's probably 8 to 10 inches long. Mm-hmm. But we have a big model of it. And it looks terrifying. Okay, so first of all, it has to find a mate.
Right.
Okay. When it finds a mate, actually the male has to find the female. Okay. The female is tiny. He could be 2 inches long. Okay. He finds his female and he bites into her body with his teeth and never lets go.
This is not a species where female choice is an issue, I'm sure.
Well, okay. Probably not. But females love this story because what happens is, that he attaches to the female and bites into her body and gets hooked up to her blood supply. So therefore, he doesn't have to feed himself anymore. He doesn't have to get any oxygen. So he sort of deteriorates until the only thing left are his gonads.
Oh, okay. I wondered why females liked it. Right.
Okay. So the female now has a lifetime supply of gonads that has, I was going to say at hand, but not really at hand, because
at fin.
He at fin, because actually he attaches at her cloacal opening. Mm-hmm. So when she does lay her eggs, they're fertilized on the way out.
Immediately, yes.
Immediately.
Right.
Okay. So that's a very handy situation.
What an interesting setup, yeah.
How is that?
Okay.
All right.
I like it.
I figured you would, because most female...
I couldn't imagine when you said he bites into her what would be so attractive,
yes.
But I get it now.
It's called male parasitism.
Right.
Actually, I don't consider him a parasite, because he's supplying the gonads whenever...
That's right.
The sperm whenever she needs it.
Right.
So what does it have to do with light? Well, that's how she attracts her food, with this lure on the top.
Right.
And she has these needle-sharp teeth. And almost all of those critters that live deep down in the dark have needle-sharp teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And why do they have these needle-sharp teeth? Because you may only get one shot at your prey, and you have to capture them on the first shot.
Well,
and
but
impale
a lot,
them with the needle teeth.
Okay, that's interesting, because a lot of bioluminescent animals that live at that, there are a lot that live at that depth, but some of them are jellyfish, some of them are squid, right? Some of them are shrimp,
yeah.
Krill,
mm-hmm.
Marine worms, as well as fish.
Yeah, but they don't live in the perpetual darkness, most of those critters.
Okay.
They live in the middle level of the oceans.
I see.
Okay, where there sometimes is some light. But we can talk about jellyfish next. We should, because we don't have a lot of time left. I'm going to talk about one jellyfish called the crystal jellyfish.
Okay.
Okay, and the reason I'm talking about this jellyfish is because it does two kinds of light production. Okay. We have a model of this beautiful jellyfish, and it has flashing lights all around the rim of its bell. That's the body of the jellyfish,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And these flashing lights are meant to attract prey to
right,
the jellyfish.
Right.
And jellyfishes capture their prey by the tentacles that hang down.
Mm-hmm.
They're sticky,
yes.
And all that, but they have stinging cells in
yes,
them.
I
so
remember
all you have to
that.
Do is touch them, and they shoot off these nematocysts. It's called a nematocyte. These nematocysts, which are little harpoons with toxin in it. Have you ever been stung by a jellyfish in all your years?
I was always very careful,
yeah.
Because we used to be very scared of
That's
them.
That's right. They are scary. And they're in all the waters of the oceans.
Yes.
Some of them are harmless, but most of them have stinging cells.
Right.
So you have to be careful. So what happens is this jellyfish can produce the typical blue-green light in the water,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And they do it with the luciferase oxidation reaction,
right.
But they need another ion. You mentioned ions; they
mm-hmm.
need another ion,
mm-hmm.
And the other ion is calcium.
Okay,
but there's a lot of calcium in the oceans because shellfish, their shells are made of calcium.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And this Japanese guy who found out about this when he was experimenting, he couldn't get them to do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
He had them in fresh water just to keep them, you know, from drying out. But as soon as he put them in seawater, they started to flash.
Right.
So he found out it was the calcium ion.
Right.
Now, okay, we have three minutes, so I'm just going to talk quickly about this. This jellyfish produces something called GFP. It's green fluorescing protein.
Okay.
That scientists have now taken the gene from the jellyfish and synthesized this specific gene to produce this green fluorescent protein, which they use for tracers.
Ah, okay.
Okay, if they want to trace the neurons in somebody's brain or a spinal system, they'll inject this a green fluorescent protein into the body,
mm-hmm.
and it will glow in your bone system or in your neuron system
okay.
as a tracer, just like sometimes we use radioactive tracers. But this, so he got a Nobel Prize for that. So that's why... People say, well, you know, what use are these critters? We
right.
never know when
right.
we need them.
Tell the story very quickly of the the bay in Puerto Rico.
I will.
Because that's in the exhibit, and you and I have been there,
right.
But I was not there at the right time of year. We can end with that. That was
okay.
A beautiful experience.
The last thing I'll talk about, all of this is in the exhibit at the Museum of Fluorescence and all that. And there were three kinds of fluorescence. We don't have time to go into it, but the most important we've spoken about.
Well, that's bioluminescence. Fluorescence, we can just say quickly, when bioluminescence is two or more substances that combine to generate light, right? In fluorescence, a substance absorbs light of one color and emits light of another color. And that's the same principle with black light, that
right.
You put phosphorus in a drawing or on your hand in a stamp, and then the black light gives off ultraviolet, which reacts to the phosphorus. But tell about the walking in the water.
So there's a bay in Puerto Rico called Mosquito Bay, and it's on the island of Vieques. And you may remember Vieques, it was in the news about 10 years ago. It was a bombing range for the U.S. Navy, and Puerto Rico wanted it back. They finally got it back, and now it's a big national park, and you have to go there by boat or fly.
Right.
So we flew to Vieques, and we stayed overnight at a beautiful B&B, and that night they took us to this Mosquito Bay. They pick you up at your hotel or motel. They take you there. You have your bathing suit on. If you want your snorkel gear, you don't really need it because you're just going to swim. You get to the bay. It's completely dark all around. It's mangroves around the whole bay. And there's a electric pontoon boat. No gas engine, just an electric engine. You get on the boat, and you start moving out into the bay. And all around the boat, the water is glowing like stars. And the wake from the motor, glowing like stars, they stop out about 25 feet from the shore. And if you want to, you go in the water. And it's the most amazing experience that I have experienced with bioluminescence. Because I've been touching these little critters, which are called dinoflagellates, and they're microscopic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're bigger than bacteria, but they're still microscopic. On contact, they glow.
Right.
And it looks like shooting stars in the water.
Right,
it's really beautiful.
You're in the water in the midst
In the midst of it, and all around you, you're glowing. Yeah. Your hands are glowing. Everything's glowing. Right. You're covered with these critters.
Yeah.
When you come out of the water, they stop glowing
because
they can't live out of water, and that's it. So you have to go when the moon isn't full. Because it ruins the effect.
Right, at the right time. No, there's one other place. I've been to a place in the Turks and Caicos Islands where they said, we're going to go see the green flash.
Yeah.
And everybody said, yeah, right. We didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And they dragged us out to some part of the island. I was on Pine Key in the Turks and Caicos Islands. And at a certain point, as the sun goes down, all of a sudden, the water just lights up with these phosphorescent or bioluminescent animals that are about to mate. And it's not every day that this happens. You had to be the right time of the month. Yeah, it was incredible. But I can just imagine swimming in the middle of that.
It's
just fabulous.
In Puerto Rico, it's all year round.
Yeah.
Whenever you go there, the best night is when there's no moon or it's cloudy.
Right.
Because then you get the great effect.
Right.
Okay, even if it's almost a full moon, you can still go out with them because you can go under the pontoon boat.
Right.
And do it. And you've probably I've had experience with bioluminescent animals on Long Island.
Right.
In the water.
Yes.
When I used to work on Fire Island, I used to canoe in the bay, in the Great South Bay, and you'd take a stroke with your paddle, and you'd see this fluorescence in the water.
Right.
It's the same thing, except in Mosquito Bay, there are billions of them,
much brighter.
And they're in there all the time. They can't really get out.
Right.
So that's an example of beautiful bioluminescence.
All
there
right,
are many other examples.
Lots of other things we could talk about, but we don't have any more time. Maybe on another show.
Right.
Iridescence, butterflies that we deal with are beautifully iridescent, and that's a special kind of special use of light. And the wings of birds are iridescent, and that's also pretty complex. So there's a lot more to talk about, as always. But I think this is it. We've give you a little taste of bioluminescence and invite you to come to the museum to see the bioluminescence show. Also, butterflies will, I don't know when this show will be on the air, but butterflies will be finished for the summer at the end of May. And we open again in October. So if you want to come see the butterflies, hurry up.
Right. Or you come back in October. To see them, and this bioluminescent show will be at the museum till January.
Great.
So you have plenty of time to go see it, save up your money. It's really worth it. and come and enjoy our museum.
Okay.
So this is this is Bernie Wides and
Carol Butler signing off.
Joe is signing off the air now.
For the Naturalist.
And we'll be back again, who knows when.
Right. Okay.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.